I should really check out Twitter more often. Okay. Attention, humanity! Attention to the very small slice of humanity who has any idea what I'm talking about. How do I use Twitter? I'm so bad at it. I really like the concept of Twitter, but... Man, I could just do this all day. But I don't get it. This is Ask an Atheist with me, bad at Twitter. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Joining me is Becky. How are you?
I'm great, Sam.
And Josh, how are you?
Doing good. But considering who's really good at Twitter, you might not want to actually try and go for that crown.
Oh, that's pretty quick to dive into where I think you're going. Who's really bad at Twitter? Or who's really good at Twitter? Or bad at Twitter?
I think prolific at this point.
Is there a difference between good at Twitter and bad at Twitter? Email me at questions@askanatheist.tv, because don't Twitter me at it, because I'm not going
to
see it.
Literally all that matters is how many people you get to tweet your comments. And it's so good or bad, it's just there's no bad press, kind of.
Because, I mean, with Facebook, Facebook might try to live in our... live somewhere in our genitalia inside the next 5 or 6 years. But at least I understand that when there's a conversation going on, I can take part in it, and I can follow what's happening on Facebook, even when I've been drinking.
Well, just be careful. He might actually come to your house uninvited and inject himself into your life for no reason at all.
Are we talking about
Facebook? Mark Zuckerberg?
We're talking Mark Zuckerberg.
Okay. Facebook actually, personified.
I mean, the Facebook, he actually thinks now he has the right to actually do that because you're a Facebook user.
Right. Oh, I know that. Yeah, he can come and take one of my kidneys. Well, my remaining kidney. Watch out what parties you go to, people. But yeah, I fire up my tablet for the first time in... who knows how long, my slowly dying tablet. And people are actually sending me messages, like the Mr. Paul Ains game is coming up. And there was a podcast about it that I need to go listen to, because...
this is our Minneapolis-favored non-regulation baseball team.
Yeah, that's... non-regulation baseball, because they play with beach balls.
That's the wrong word. The correct word escaped me. No, forgive me, all baseball fans and husband.
It's totally regulation baseball. It's got 9 innings.
It's totally regulation baseball.
It's probably more regulation baseball than actual baseball from your perspective, because I still think they have to throw pitches to intentionally walk somebody.
Ah, interesting.
And I remember you talking about how terrible that was.
No, I was okay with it.
No, you weren't.
It's fun to watch them.
You yelled that. No, you were not okay with the just go on ahead for the intentional walk. You yelled at it about me for some time.
No, I am not okay with the just going through an intentional walk. I am okay with throwing 4 balls in order to make someone take first base, because there's wacky and funny things that can happen during those 4 pitches.
What I'm saying is, by your lights, Mr. Paul Ains plays more realer baseball than Major League Baseball.
I am guilty of the no true Scotsmaning fallacy of baseball.
The phrase I think you're looking for is independent league.
There we go.
Yeah.
I told you the real word escaped me.
Because I think non-regulation baseball is actually Blurn's ball, which I would totally watch.
Futurama. Futurama?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm totally leaving you behind, aren't I?
Yeah, no, I mean, my only reference is basketball.
That's also non-regulation.
Yeah, that's fairly non-regulation. But it's the... I gotta make it to one of those games. I have to. It's the crossing of 2 things that I care deeply about. Not believing in something and believing in something.
With no conflict whatsoever.
With no conflict whatsoever. And somebody else on Twitter was saying, what was this? Are atheists better prepared to fix the earth than theists? And this is one N God we trusted. Looks like, I don't know who this guy is. But I just saw this literally that popped up on my thing right as I was talking. And,
well, what do you think? Are atheists better equipped to save the world?
You're removing one aspect that's negative to, actually trying to do things. That's not necessarily going to reflect on actually like being able to absolutely do better.
Yeah.
It just means you're just getting rid of the superstition.
Yeah.
But there are superstitious atheists.
There's a lot of people that are motivated through their faith towards, environmental stewardship and things like that. And I would say that if you're motivated to save the Earth, that better equips you to save the Earth, regardless of whether you believe in God or not.
Yeah,
maybe, because if you're motivated by faith and you don't want to take evidence into account, you might think that toxic sludge might be good for the environment because of your faith. And then that's...
Yeah, I mean, there's the politic answer, because in truth, I really place fixing problems, like actually fixing problems, on a higher level of import than what you believe in to get them fixed.
Like the semantics. Yeah. The semantics aren't as important actual.
Yeah. I mean, I know I'm weird this way, but implementational details don't bother me quite so much in situations like this. You know, it's like, I know how we can fix global warming. Let's kill 6 billion people. That's a bad plan. That is a bad plan. And there's a lot of people who think that's a good plan. But they don't think that because they just haven't thought all the way through.
They think that they're going to be absolutely not on that list of...
Well, yeah. It's like everybody who thinks that it's like the... Come on, I love you guys, but you know I'm going to say this. The prepping community, the preppers. I love those guys because we're all into the same stuff. But they always think they're going to be on the side that lives. Haha, no, I'm gonna die. I'm a dead man.
The thing is, like, the preppers, like, at the point that your actual prepping becomes useful, it's gonna be in a world that you probably don't want to live in anymore. I mean, like, you're preparing just to make sure that you never ever engage with society again whatsoever.
I do try to be very careful when I talk about my desire to live, because that takes us into places that might scare some people. But, I mean, I can't hate them, because they're like the one community who still cares about ham radio. Come on, man! I gotta give him some love for that.
Yeah, I mean,
you could be the voice of the resistance.
We all watch the same YouTube videos, like that guy who made gunpowder out of his own pee.
True story. It works.
I've been following that guy for way longer. Like, because he did a whole year of beekeeping videos, and I watched the heck out of those. Because if I wouldn't die, I would totally keep bees.
Right, and then I think the prepper community actually does bring something. I mean, they're the keeping old school tactics alive. I mean, they might never, I mean, the grand thing that they're preparing for might never come to fruition, but they're good skills relatively to have. I mean, it's good to know how to fire a bow and arrow.
And that's the thing. And the best of these communities actually turn them into usable skills for, like, first responders and disaster preparedness, disaster recovery. There's ways to do this, but there's always that creepy side of it where some people are like waiting for the end of the world.
Yeah, no, they're invested in the end of the world at this point. Like they've been investing in the end of the world, and they know that, like, basically in their minds they're going to be king after everybody else is dead.
But yeah, no, I'm totally, it's I love the skills that it comes with it, where I find myself in that community a lot of the times, but sometimes it gets me weird. I don't know, how did we get here? So there's the politic answer, which is, I don't really care about implementational details so much, and I really shouldn't say this because it might undermine me in some way, but actually I think the kind of mental gymnastics one has to do in order to be an atheist in America, where you have to get over common thinking in order to be a public atheist, and you have to say, I'm not really willing to go along with something that I think is a bad idea, based on evidence and facts and science and all that stuff, means that you might be a little bit ahead of the curve when it comes to absorbing new information when you go forth and try to fix these problems. So I mean, there may be some advantage given to you, but... You know, I don't really want to be about that, because honestly, it's an advantage. It's not an enablement. Like, I think it's totally possible for religious people to fix global warming.
And if you are an atheist, and that maybe will give you the mental facility to reason with these things, it doesn't necessarily, as you said, the enablement, it might not endear you to the folks that have the resources to be able to enact those plans.
Actually, I could probably make it to the most annoying. I'll point to the most annoying debate that I can think of. The most annoying, interesting debate that I can think of, which was the Nye Ham debate, where the question was asked, what would it take to change your mind?
Bill Nye
said, yeah, you know, I'm following the evidence. If the evidence changes, if science says that what we're thinking right now is wrong at some other way, I could be convinced. You just have to, you know, I'm going to be empirical about it. Ken Ham says nothing.
Yeah, he's got a book.
Right.
Bill Nye, there's a book.
Yeah, there's a book, and it's in the book, and then, and that's, I think, that's the one place where I think... people, not atheists, would be more advantaged than theists. Note that it's not specifically about what we believe. It's not about the believing in God or the not believing in God. It's the process by which we get to our atheism. And so if theists should somehow adopt that process more globally, that advantage might be conferred upon them as well.
Yeah, use it, 'cause they use scare tactics all the time. If they just actually focus their scare tactics on something positive for humanity.
So we've been talking about nice people. Perhaps we could talk about some horrible people.
Maybe? Horrible people!
A lot of horrible people this week.
Got an abundant.
You know, speaking of apocalypses and people surviving apocalypses, whatever. I may hang out with the prepper community or whatever they want to be called now. I don't know. I'm bad at names. I wouldn't survive. I mean, I come from a family. We're all entertainers. We all wanted to be entertainers. That's all we ever wanted to be. I got one cut. My cousins are musicians or stand up comedians. My dad is a musician. Always wanted to be a rock star. I kind of even failed at that. I've always wanted to be a talk show host. I've always wanted to be. I'll be honest with you.
So there is a place for you, though. You could be the three dog of the post-apocalyptic community in real life.
Is that a...
That's a Fallout reference.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I haven't played three yet.
I just figure that for me, my glasses break, I lose my inhaler, I'm done.
Yeah. But I've always wanted to be a talk show host. I mean, there's actually a recording of me at like 4 years old on my dad's first boombox of me doing a talk show. Somewhere.
It's called the Sam Mulvey Experience, if I remember correctly.
I didn't call it that, but... So,
in your dad's handwriting on the little cassette tape.
Yeah. So you've seen it.
I have.
Where?
It is stored away in safe places, probably needing to be digitized at this point.
Yeah, it's probably already too late.
Are you afraid that you're going to destroy it?
Well, magnetic mediums like that. It just stops. So, you know, I pay attention to talk show hosts. And I got a favorite, you know, bad one, and I think you know who it is. Kelly Jones, the estranged ex-wife of TV and radio conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, recently sued for increased custody rights of their three children. Kelly claims that Alex is not a stable person, alluding to comments about wanting to break Alec Baldwin's neck and that Jennifer Lopez should be raped. Not a thing I'd ever thought I'd say on this show. Alex Jones' attorney, in defense of his clients, proclaimed that Alex is a performance artist and that he's playing a character. Alex testified that he is an actor, but he also believes in what he stands for. According to Alex Jones, the jury agreed we should have remained as joint managing conservators. Though Jones touts this as a win, he must now share custody with Kelly.
This was the most tense and strange thing when Alex Jones, the most bombastic of all conspiracy theorists, says,
"Oh, I don't know
hey,
about
media,
that.
Please, please, you know, keep your distance and be respectful." For Alex Jones to ask the media, "Please be respectful," when he has done nothing except for say that the media is big corporate media hiding.
You see, I don't know why he gets custody of his children when he's clearly hitting them with cattle prods every time they use a wrong preposition.
And here we go. If you want to take that sound clip, you too can be part of the big media that is disrespectful of Alex Jones.
Alex Jones feeds his children hamburgers with broken glass in them. He does. The mustard is laced with arsenic. And if you read that article in Spiegel about what he does with sausage, I'll just leave that one going. Because it's not a cool thing. Alex Jones is terrible. He shouldn't be allowed near children. I mean, did you hear about that time he took somebody else's kid and turned him into a lamppost? It was terrible. It was terrible.
A lamppost?
And then he turned into a lizard and flew to Beta Reticuli.
So have we got the gist of Alex Jones here?
Am I being respectful? Is that respectful enough?
Quite respectful. And in the midst of all of this, Alex Jones is trying to claim against his ex-wife that she was an unstable person and unfit to be a mother.
She has so much evidence against him. It's just amazing. Like he'll make this claim, but I mean, literally almost everybody's seen his shtick.
Right.
Whether it's real or not.
Well, yeah, he is a presidential influential crackpot from Austin. I mean, he has interviewed the president. He has people on his show who talk about how Sandy Hook was a false flag operation, how there's no actual, this is a guy who parades dead children for his own, to push his own line of nutraceuticals.
And he's unassailable for it. I mean, essentially, right. I mean, look, for all of 2015, he was pushing Jade Helm, Obama's going to take over Texas.
You know, that was one of those things where people were talking about it, and it's like, I don't even care. What the heck was Jade Helm?
So there was a massive war game going on that in Texas that actually happens a lot.
They do that.
Like reenactments and entertainment?
Training.
Oh, okay.
So it's for training purposes, and so they started this conspiracy. The conspiracy theory was pushed that this was Obama taking over Texas, a state that is part of the United States, which he was president of at the time. But basically,
presumably already having power over Texas.
Correct. And so the governor decided to Greg Abbott, I believe, decided that he was going to activate the National Guard to keep an eye on the federal military. And nothing came of this, and nobody talks about Jade Helm anymore. But in 2015, this was all they were talking about. This was a massive conspiracy that was just all the rage.
I was on the mailing list for, maybe I shouldn't say this on the air or on my podcast, but I was on the mailing list of the Michigan militia when they did their thing in the 90s.
Out of prurient interest, because, you want to keep tabs on them.
I've talked about this. Things that scare me, I tend to keep tabs on, and that whole stuff kind of scared me a little bit, and I wanted to know what the heck was going on. So I signed up for stuff because it was the internet in the 90s, and nobody knew what it was, so it was pretty good.
Careful, Sam, because these are preppers. This is the prepper community.
No, there is a sharp division between the militia guys and the...
I don't know. The Venn diagram between is probably... Well, converged.
No, I think the Venn diagram has an overarching sphere of people who are interested in survivalist skills. You have a bubble over here that are militia guys, and a bubble over here...
That really like zombie movies.
That like zombie movies, and are IT professionals between 25 and 45 who like to drink beer on the weekends. And I think those are two separate... I think those are two separate populations.
Okay.
I think there may be a fourth bubble that overlaps the two. I'm not saying that there's no crossover, but having spoken to both weird militia guys and
your brethren.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really a part of it, but the prepper community. There's not a lot going on.
All right, I stand corrected.
No, I mean, wait. I know what the bubble is. It's conspiracy theorist guys. So we're back to Alex Jones. Yay! because you do go run into preppers who are conspiracy theorists, who are into all the chemtrails. More on that later. So, I mean, there is some overlap there.
I can see that the conspiracy theory that dives into racism also then overlaps with the militia folks, because my favorite, and by favorite, I mean the most absurd one that speaks to me, right, in terms of yelling about it, is that sending minority students to college is a eugenics program secretly pushed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And on that happy note, we'll see you in a minute. And I think we'll talk more about that one. Jeez.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal! Here you go!
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTFPod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait a minute, not sacrificing children, that's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTFPod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-
Not this phone number. Not this number.
And vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997. And wait for the tone.
Sure, it's the unofficial theme for, you know, the political section. But I guess it's political, but I'm not done talking about Alex Jones. And the fact that he asked for respect regarding his children when he was in a custody battle, even though he uses his children as bases in his kickball game. And he wears shoes with nails in them. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Alex Jones is an alien from space. So the funny thing here that is that Alex Jones, this is the most salient point that you were saying about him.
Back to on your point that he wants respect for his children and all that, but then he trumpeted the 26 people murdered at Sandy Hook as a false flag.
Right.
He doesn't show respect for anybody else, but he demands respect for himself.
Right. Clearly.
and furthermore he wants to be recognized as a legitimate news source, but at the same time his defense lawyer has to sit there and he's just a character.
Well, frankly, and this goes into a little bit about how we do Ask an Atheist, and I've said this a couple of times that you know, it's a little less true now than it was, especially in the early days of the show, but I play a character on Ask an Atheist. I do. The kind of stuff that I do, the kind of stuff that I say and the kind of stuff that I do on Ask an Atheist isn't necessarily what I would do when I'm hanging out with you in real life. And maybe you've noticed the difference.
Well, yeah, and the same is for me. I mean, it's a radio personality. We develop these personalities that are separate from how we actively engage with people in real life.
Right. So I mean, my personality on the air is
more outspoken.
Actually, not so much outspoken. Well, yeah, no, I do talk. I am a lot more forthright with my opinions on the air. That's true. People who are used to me on the show who meet me in real life are sometimes surprised how little I talk. Unless there's a bar nearby.
Right. And, I mean, I feel the same thing about myself. I mean, like, I really don't like to talk a lot.
Right. But
I'm pretty much exactly what you hear.
Yeah. Yeah, Becky is. And that's an amazing thing. But Becky's... The interesting thing about Becky, and this is why I play a character on the air a little bit, is because Becky's character, as she is already well suited for the air because she is first and foremost an educator. And the thing that I was going to say is that the thing that I mostly do is pretend I don't know stuff. Like in interviews or in discussions with experts or people who know more stuff than me, I'll pretend I don't know things because I want to be enlightened. And as I'm being enlightened, other people are being enlightened. So that's the whole point. And right. that's one of the key concepts of doing interviews, which is something that I spend way more time thinking about than you'd think.
Does Alex Jones ever pretend to know less than what he expounds?
Let me get there. But between, so we can take me, who has a listenership of like maybe 70, and then we can scale that up to millions and billions and billions. We can talk about Stephen Colbert, who definitely played a character as a talk show host for a very long time. But it was satire. And it was, you know, the intent, it was more honest than I was, because I didn't intimate that I had a different on-air personality than I do, you know, in real life. Stephen Colbert, but he would do, you know, he would do shoot interviews.
Yeah, and he would do absurd positions.
Right.
Obviously absurd positions just to bring them to the light and just show them, just shine light on how absurd they are.
It was clearly a work of parody. And that parody and that character, although he's, you know, now that he's taken Letterman's job, but he'll still revert to that parody character now and again, especially now that Bill O'Reilly is leaving. Yes. Characters, it's not saying anything. My point is, it's not saying anything in the court of law to say that I'm a performance artist because I'm playing a character on my talk show. But what Alex Jones does, to bring it back to what Becky was saying, is that he presents himself as the person who's telling you the truth. He's the guy who, I mean, the name of his site is InfoWars. He's saying he is out front. He is the general. He's literally the person who wants to present himself as leading a revolution against the economic system, against the United States of America, against the very things he has profited so well by that he's on a first name basis with the president. His custody hearings are front page news, and he's got millions of supporters by him. He doesn't want the system to change. Just look at how he, this all, and what this all comes down to is advertising.
Yeah, advertising. And also, I mean, not just Alex Jones, but you notice that all these conservative talk show radio hosts have, they're kind of floundering now because they didn't expect to win.
I could do.
And so now they own the system and their anti-system policy stances
right.
are no longer valid because they now own.
It's a little bit more complex than that because I know, like, I was in broadcast. I was in AM talk radio. We tried to sell the show back when we were on the air. We tried to sell the show to a lot of stations. We did. We didn't do very well because we would get phone calls where, you know, I talked to the guy, I'd chat him up. Not that way. Although if it got me on the air, I might. Where I would say, you know, I think talk radio is great. I think talk radio has more of an influence, but I think things need to change. And these general managers would be like, yeah, man, but talk radio isn't really hitting it like it used to. We really need to change our game up. And then broadcast magazines are talking, you know, are occasionally publishing articles about the people who listen to Limbaugh, the people who are listening to Hannity. That demographic is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And this is why Rush Limbaugh doesn't have entire stations devoted to his ideology anymore when he did. Just 10 years ago.
It's more than just the shrinking of that audience.
No, because it's a huge component of it.
It
though.
Is.
They're not aging out. His listenership is straight up dying. And that's the problem. And they're not reaching, and they know this. And this is why people like Sean Hannity are scared, because they know they're not bringing in the listeners that they used to. They're not bringing, their demographic is not shifting with the times.
Their demographic is dying out and nobody is aging in to their
right.
demographic.
And the interesting thing about Hannity and Limbaugh is that they hated everybody and thought racism was pretty okay, but they kind of believed in the system in their own way. Alex Jones, not so much.
The systems that Alex Jones believes in, though, are really suspect. When he says that, or when his lawyers say that he is merely playing a character, yet Alex Jones at the same time testifies for 3 days in his custody hearing saying that 95% of the time on InfoWars he is a kind and gentle person, and 99.5% of the time at home he's a kind and gentle person. I'm really having a hard time looking at, say, a 24-hour period of content from InfoWars and determining which 95% of that he believes he is being kind and gentle. And if that's what he's saying, even his character yeah. is a kind and gentle human, then he is of no judge to say whether he can have full custody of his children because he is kind and gentle and a fit parent
right.
when his ex-wife is saying, you're crazy and unstable and unfit to parent our children.
Yeah. So to wrap up what I was saying before, to bring it to what Becky is saying, the complexities of talk radio are are large, because you also have podcasting, which is what we're doing right now, which is really taking over that space because people are tired of political talk, because on the radio, political talk was all there was. And that was one of the reasons why I didn't want to do politics on Ask an Atheist for so long. I was trying to be policy-based and to talk about issues that matter without just sounding like a liberal Rush Limbaugh. He said, drinking out of a Rush Limbaugh tea mug. The thing is, and so people are saying, oh, he finally admitted it. He admitted it. He said in court during a custody battle, for the purposes of his kids, that he's a performance artist and he's not really that bad. Except I say to you that it's no problem for somebody who does this or thinks about this as much as he does or I do to admit that we're performance artists. So he didn't admit crap. So when the chips were down and it was either he had to admit that he wasn't a crackpot jerk who was just there to sell you flim-flam drugs, or that he was a father who cared about his children, he opted for the former. This is the kind of thing that I was looking for when I was interviewing, what's-his-face, the Growing Pains hanger-on.
Kurt Cameron?
No, the other one. His friend. The hanger-on.
Banana Man.
Banana Man.
Oh, Ray Comfort.
Ray Comfort, yeah. That's why I named the show Behold the Man, is it's like, okay, I've seen this guy be interviewed here from here to attorney. I've seen him be debated by people who know how to debate. I may have opinions on their character, but they know how to debate. And so I saw all that. But I wanted to see what was underneath this power armor that he uses to battle atheists. You know what I mean?
His battle armor is always literally, look, it doesn't matter what you say.
Yeah.
You're a sinner. Literally, no matter what you're going to say to him, he's built his entire empire around.
I will credit him and say it's a little bit more complex than that. That is the basis of his argument, but man, he is a showman. But he's an empty suit. You get underneath the arguments, you know, you get underneath that battle armor, you get underneath the you're a sinner, you know what else is there? More suit. I really enjoyed the opportunity, and I got to get up and smell the dude, which sounds weird, but it means something to me. Smells mean things to me. And so I get to go up to the guy and talk to him and be in the room with him and deal with him on a face-to-face level and to really get to know him. But I didn't really. So I failed. That episode kind of failed.
I had a little personal connection with that particular episode recently, and that was that Kirk Cameron's, I don't know, 42nd birthday or something just happened recently. Some birthday of his happened. And there was this little picture being put around Snapchat or Instagram or Twitter or something like that. And everyone said, oh, it's so sad because it's Kirk Cameron and he's got this little, you know, I don't know, birthday cake and it's in a conference room. Hey, I know that conference room. That's where we interviewed Ray Comfort.
Yeah.
And I would say, I would agree, that would be a really sad little conference room to have your birthday cake in.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cool facility. It's a former mortuary, funeral home, sorry, that he built Living Waters Ministries in.
Converted into a studio that's far better than any atheist studio I've seen.
I wouldn't know that. I mean, some atheist shows happen in actual radio stations.
Mortuary seems fitting.
Okay. there is a resonance there. But I didn't really learn anything about or make any real connection with the guy, I thought. Now, his tech crew, if they were allowed to drink, I would totally take them out for a beer because they knew their stuff. They knew what they were doing. And that was a fun conversation.
Well, yeah. I mean, you ever watch any Ray Comfort stuff? It's all editing.
Atheists talking about Ray Comfort. I just realized that. Ray Comfort's over, okay? That ship sailed like 10 years ago. It's done.
He just released another book.
Whatever.
It's not over.
Whatever. Yeah, but to wrap it up, I think my point is that this is, I didn't get to interview Alex Jones.
Right.
But in a way, I don't need to now. Thanks to the courts, I got to see behold the man. And the man sucks. The man's not actually a man.
Underneath the suit, there's more suit.
He's a cloud person.
Made of chemtrails.
To make a reference that you were making before the show started.
We have conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. We also have some amazing TV hucksters. TV hucksters, yeah. And evangelists. And this one you just ate all up.
Federal agents from the IRS and U.S. Postal Services searched televangelist Benny Hinn's Dallas area home and headquarters this week, confiscating file boxes and other items. The U.S. Attorney's Office neither confirmed nor denied the raid took place. Hinn was subject to a Senate Finance Committee's investigation in 2007, which concluded with no definitive findings of wrongdoing in 2010. Hinn was reportedly in Paris during the raid, but his ministry stated that they are cooperating fully and remain confident that there will be a positive and speedy outcome in the days ahead. They also noted that Pastor Benny approaches the love, prayers, and support of our beloved partners as we continue to minister to the saving and healing gospel of Jesus Christ throughout the world.
So, yet again, here we have Benny Hinn being investigated possibly for taxes and things like that, because the 2007 investigation that started it just kind of fizzled out without ever finding, yes, there's wrongdoing, or no, we've cleared him. And it was all about this personal use of church credit cards and mansions and private jets. And when you have a ministry in a church, you are allowed to have those things and be exempted from taxation on them to a certain degree. As soon as they start being used for personal gain and enjoyment, that tax benefit really ought to go away. And so when you have folks using the ministry jet cavorting around the world, and when you have multiple pastors having multi-million dollar homes, you can't say, I mean, it's a little bit beyond the parsonage exemption from taxes. So who knows? Maybe under this administration, we'll find some wrongdoing.
I'm amazed that it's happening under this administration, honestly. I mean, I would have figured that somebody would have stepped in from the Trump team.
Well, we keep discovering that the Senate continues to not be horribly terrible or terribly horrible.
At least a little bit better than the House.
Yeah, they seem to be a cut above it.
Well, and the first time he was investigated, it was initiated by Chuck Grassley, who's a Republican from Iowa.
Yeah.
So there may be Republican folks that are aligned with a religious orientation, but they may not like this particular religious orientation.
Right. And there's a totally a branch of evangelical Christianity who despise Benny Hinn way more than I could if I tried. That is a thing that exists.
Oh, my perspective has always been like they see each other as always like, they might not believe the same thing, but they're fellow Christians.
Right.
We should defend them at all costs.
Yeah.
Because anything that attacks that Christianity, even if it's not what I believe, is an attack on my Christianity.
But the list of that's true. I mean, there is the circle the wagons mentality.
Circle the wagon. I mean, we're seeing Catholics and Protestants hand in hand at this point.
Right. That's true. But I mean, there's also an element of the population. I mean, televangelists, just a bad idea. The list of them who've made who've made terrible decisions is getting pretty long.
Suspect actions, if you will.
Yeah, you got we went to that one gas station in Indio, California.
Oh, yeah.
Where they had the Jimmy Swaggart plaque.
Yeah, they commemorated
what he did at this gas station in the 80s.
They commemorated that he purchased something at this gas station.
Yeah.
It was a most fitting thing. I mean, forget the mortuary as your studio.
It was
kind of a grimy gas station with a plaque on it.
Yeah, it was
in honor of you.
It was close to Jimmy Swaggart slept here, but didn't sleep there, is what I'm saying.
Are we getting into Alex Jones territory here?
No, that's what the sign says.
It's true.
I am being like, I will post a picture, dude.
Is this where the Swagger got busted at?
Yeah, it's where he got busted.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I think Peter Popoff is well known to the atheist community.
For the huckster that he
is. Yeah, for the hucksterism. And now, you know, Benny Hinn. Okay, we used to blog a lot on the Ask an Atheist website, but none of us are really bloggers.
You actually had some writing about Benny Hinn at some point.
No,
he was in where? Who was the televangelist that was in trouble, financial trouble?
It was Benny Hinn.
Oh, it was Benny Hinn.
Yeah, I had a post on the blog that was, I thought, my greatest creation, because I didn't write anything. I just quoted the headline with pictures. Benny Hinn needs $2 million to get out of debt. Picture of his house. Benny Hinn needs $2 million to avoid bankruptcy, I think it was. Picture of his house. Needs $2.1 million to avoid bankruptcy. Picture of his headquarters. $2.1 million. Picture of his summer home, and then a picture of his jet. Benny Hinn raises $2 million in 24 hours because he can do that. He's got that kind of power.
if any atheistic or secular media could do that, if any charity serving the poor or needy folks or some sort of cause for human betterment could raise that in 24 hours, I mean, I think the world would be a better place.
I find it amazing. I mean, Christians, they tout themselves as the superior moral people. They didn't.
So, I mean, it's good that they're going to... Ultimately, I think it's good that they're going to investigate him. I don't expect anything to come of it, really. I don't.
3 more years of foot dragging and sifting through file boxes only to find no conclusive evidence of wrongdoing or clearing.
Right.
And it's the IRS, it's going to be another attack
right.
on the church by the IRS.
And it wasn't too long ago that some bad stuff was uncovered at the IRS regarding religions, and now people...
people are very distrustful about
religious communities are on the warpath about it. So I, you know, as much as I would like this to go somewhere, I'm not expecting it to be honest with you. I'd like it. This guy's a scam artist. He's exactly the kind of thing that I would point to as reasons why Ask an Atheist exists. Because, man,
the praying
This is the kind of stuff that we would all talk about. When we were starting to show up, and I've been watching Benny Hinn going on, I think I first saw him in the late 90s, so we're going on 20 years of that, and he doesn't pay a dime in taxes. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Go to a break, and we'll actually get to the political stuff when we get back.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait a minute, not sacrificing children. That's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Has Ngadwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster Ngadwe Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an Ngadwe Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to AskAnAtheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I guess it's just all about horrible people today. Actually, it's in my show notes. Horrible people, plural, horrible person, singular. And on that note, by executive order of Donald Trump, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement activated a phone line on Wednesday for victims of immigrant crime engagement or voice to acknowledge and serve the needs of crime victims and their families who have been impacted by crimes committed by removable criminal aliens. In response to Iced Sweet announcing the phone line, callers began flooding it with reports of spaced aliens and UFOs. The movement to shut down the hotline seems to have been started by New York-based anti-Trump Marine vet Alexander McCoy, whose viral tweet stated, "Wouldn't it be a shame if millions of people called this hotline to report their encounters with aliens of the UFO variety?" ICE decried the hoax, saying that they are neither an appropriate nor constructive way to express one's opinions, and that they create a waste of government resources.
You know what's a waste of government resources? A line? A hotline solely to demonize immigrants that merely refers you to resources for fighting crime that already exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not a very good use of government funds and resources.
You know, I was totally going to make a Nazi joke, so thank you guys for getting me out of that one, because I could really not take it anywhere else. We live in an era where red line jokes are made a lot because someone, you know, a prominent person declared a red line and then it was kind of crossed with a band and nothing happened. But this is literally one of those times where I have no trouble saying that this is precisely what a fascist government would do.
I think
pick out a segment of the population and, beyond the stuff that already serves the needs of the population fairly credibly, not without problem, don't get me wrong, but the police generally do a better job than they don't, you know, but they have to go somewhere special and point out this segment of the population, legal or not. I don't care. This is not territory you go to if you purport to be the leader of the free world.
It also smells of statistics fishing. Like they can't really actually come out with statistics to support their position, so they want this hotline that gives you all these anecdotes that they can use in their favor.
Yeah.
On statistics, it is a very cogent point because most studies show that immigrants, regardless of their legal status in the country, do not commit crimes at any higher rates than citizens and legal residents.
Don't even care. Do not care at all. They could commit way more crimes than the, you know, illegal aliens could create way more crimes than citizens. We have a system to handle this that doesn't single out populations of people. And you know how this is going to go. This is the immigration and customs enforcement way to ensure their budget.
It's fishing for a problem that doesn't exist,
yeah,
or statistically doesn't exist.
I wonder what would happen if someone whose needs needed to be served, who was a crime victim, and the families of a crime who have been impacted by crimes committed by removable criminal aliens, was actually themselves someone without legal status. Because you know what? If you are trafficked into the United States, if you are a victim of domestic violence or intimate partner violence, and you do not have legal status, you actually have legal rights. We have a system to assist you. But do we think that any of those folks who are calling the voice hotline are going to be referred to credible resources? Or do we think that they're going to be a box to check?
I'm not saying you're wrong, but I don't even want to bring associated cases into this. We don't need to pull out and say this is part of a larger problem. We don't need to do intersectionality here. I'm not saying intersectionality is bad. I'm saying we don't need it, and maybe we should, honestly, this is bad enough. Our government just set up a line so that you can report specially on a segment of the population, like specifically. And it's not like they think that these are illegal Bosnians. You know, it's not like they're saying they're not. You know what they're thinking of when they set this stuff up like this. They've made it clear time and time again. Where does ICE spend all of its money? They're certainly not spending
the southern border.
They are not spending it here. We've got a border. They're spending it in the South. And so there is no question about who this is about. There is no question about who this stands for. I mean...
Do you know what state also borders Mexico? What? New Mexico. Do you know what New Mexico is famed for? Area 54. I think that this is completely fitting. We need to report all of these little Roswell aliens.
Area 54.
Yeah, Area 51.
What? Okay, this we're back to Alex Jones.
Here we go.
What secret conspiracy stuff do you know, Becky?
Again, yes, things have escaped me. Perhaps I might have been envisioning Studio 54 mixed with Area 51. I don't know. I like
the idea
of just going aliens.
That would be the best thing ever. Oh,
this is drug using.
Favorite.
Disco aliens.
Places I want to die. Number one, Area 54.
Oh, man, I'm going to get made fun of for this tremendously, aren't I? These are tremendous words I'm using, right?
Oh, that is amazing. Oh, that is great.
Actually, no, now I want to really call into the voice hotline and report.
Disco aliens.
Disco aliens.
Yeah, actually, I want to take it back. I'm not saying intersectionality is a bad thing, and I think bringing it up isn't bad, and it probably ought to be brought up, but I almost don't want it to take away from the facts of the case that we are, again, singling out, as an official act of the government, singling out a section of the government and saying, if a crime is happening by this group of people, go extrajudicially to talk about it. We've seen this before. And every time we've seen it before, it doesn't go anywhere good. A lot of the darkest days in not only... we could go back and talk about the Alien and Sedition Acts. We don't have to go over to Europe to talk about it. We can talk about it here. We can talk about the suspension of habeas corpus by Abraham Lincoln. We don't have to go that far away. And this stuff is never followed by anything good. And why anybody think this would solve anyone's problem ever...
Yeah, there's a reason why 1984 has become as popular. It sells out everywhere. I mean, this is exactly what Orwell was talking about when he was talking about doublespeak. And,
yeah.
The Nazis...
On the other hand...
have done this. Communists have done this. It makes you afraid of your neighbors. It becomes a means to control a population.
However, if you're a neo-Nazi jackass who used to run a website named after somebody who killed an organization that actually helped people and helped let them vote, this may give you a huge... I'm like talking chair leg erection. So that's... And that's where I think this comes from. You know, it's not like we're... You know, I mean, okay, it's not too far. We haven't crossed the threshold yet. It's getting close. We can step back. We can do something about it. We're doing the marches for, you know, an entire gender protested this government, a philosophical concept protested this guy last week. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But it's not like we have an official Loyalty Day or something like that.
Oh.
Donald Trump issued a proclamation to commemorate Loyalty Day, which Congress legally designated as a holiday in 1958 in an aim to lessen the popularity impact of May Day actions of socialists, communists, and unionized workers. Trump declared that our nation perseveres in the face of those who would seek to harm it, and that the loyalty of our citizenry sends a clear signal to our allies and enemies that the U.S. will never yield from our way of life. Whoa, okay. Obama's 2016 Loyalty Day proclamation emphasized a commitment to expanding our founders' sense of freedom and promise and mentioned key moments in American history like the Underground Railroad and lunch counter sit-ins as evidence of America fulfilling its responsibility to deliver a freer, fairer nation to the next generation. According to the U.S. Code, Loyalty Day is defined as the reaffirmation of loyalty to the United States and for the recognition of the heritage of American freedom.
I'm just as put off, Sam, by the U.S. never yielding its way of life as you were in the middle of that read.
Right.
Because there's a lot of things about our way of life that I would really love to yield on and then change. You know, like, say, income inequality, gender discrepancy in pay, disproportionate incarceration for people of color. Those are all really good things that I think we should yield on. I don't think we should stand firm in those kinds of things.
1958, that's around the era where isn't that we finally got In God We Trust as our motto?
I think it was right around 56 was okay. In God We Trust. We had the pledge being added, Under God and the Pledge being added in 54.
Yeah. The 1950s were not great for this. I mean, then there's the whole McCarthy knobbery. Like I said, every time this stuff happens, it's not connected to anything good. People aren't helped by this.
Yeah, they're creating purity tests to they're trying to establish what is the ideal American citizen, and you know what? It's not you.
And this particular write-up, I think, does a... So I'm complimenting one of you. Donald Trump did not invent Loyalty Day.
No.
It was not his idea. It was from 1958. And Obama calls it Loyalty Day when he was president. You know what he called it when he was a, you know, community organizer in Chicago? Pretty sure he called it May Day.
Wouldn't put it past him at all.
Yeah, because May Day has a history that extends far earlier than the Soviet Union and the Cold War.
There's really interesting things, actually, that Loyalty Day came up in the 20s as a pushback against what was going on in Russia at the time. And that in 1955, I believe Eisenhower was president in 55, if I'm not mistaken, although I have been mistaken about many things during this episode today.
Yeah.
But I think that it was 58 that Congress finally said, yes, we'll make it official holiday as an act of Congress. But before that, Eisenhower had it in 1955. We've had loyalty oaths in cities and in towns across the U.S. Lots of times you'll have a city that declares in conjunction with July 4th, Independence Day, Loyalty Day, which is the craziest, most berserker thing that I've ever like heard of, because you're celebrating being a rebel by then being a loyalist. And, you know, it's kind of just bonkers.
Well,
and like you said, it's a purity test.
May Day is a kind of loyalty day. Let's not lie.
Loyalty to the rights of the people and to the voice of the people to be able to.
If you're a socialist in the early 20th century, or if you were a former member, if you're a former citizen of the Soviet Union, probably has some loyalty stuff going on there.
Okay.
Loyalty to a platform that is beneficial to your stance,
theoretically. So let's not pretend that May Day doesn't also have at its heart a loyalty concept, but it has in the years since kind of grown beyond its means.
Sometimes calling for direct action against those that keep systems from yielding.
Well, that's totally May Day. That's like straight out of the dialectic, Becky.
I'm right about some things?
Well, you're right about two things. You're right about Eisenhower in 1955, yeah.
For the record, I am working tomorrow, even though I am having my Go Union, all union leadership and all union membership meeting later on in the week. For May Day, I am working.
Well, education. And I'm not working, so I think we cancel out.
You and your union of one.
Oh god, unionized podcasters. What would that even look like? I don't know. I was never a big May Day fan either, but man, I would totally run away from something called Loyalty Day.
Have you ever had to take a loyalty oath in anything? I mean,
well,
besides
the Pledge of Allegiance,
the pledge?
And then when I joined the military.
Oh, right, there we go.
Yeah. That's definitely a
kind of a loyalty oath there. But that one is entered into voluntarily,
yes,
normally.
I'm not denying that. I didn't voluntarily do that. But
right.
That's the whole point of a voluntary force.
Right, yeah. And I think that's the situation where I don't have a problem. If, you know, that is the culture of the place, it is designed to do a thing, you're expected to do that when you go in, okay, fine. Kindergartners? Not so happy with that, because they don't even know what the heck it is. I mumbled it every day for several years, never once considering what the words were. And when I did, I'm like, oh, that's no good.
When you're a child, it's literally something you just do with it. You're just expected to do, and it's just because the adults tell you. And so at no point has an adult ever sat down a child and go like, look, this is what this means. This is just what you do.
Hey, we sit down the kids and tell them what it's about, especially me as a high school and middle school teacher. I've had many discussions with, well, do you actually want to say this? Do you know that you don't have to be forced to say this? And people will say, you know, my kids will say, hey, but my blah, 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 teacher got mad at me and told me I had to stand up. And I said, well, next time anyone does that, you can bring this case law to them saying that you specifically do not have to be told to stand up, and you cannot receive any penalty for not standing up to say the pledge, and you don't have to recite the pledge. You can be forced to remain quiet and respectful, but you can turn your back to the flag, you can stay seated, you can stay silent, you can recite part of the pledge and not all of it, and you cannot be penalized for it academically or socially.
I think you should be allowed to shout and say, this is crap, I shouldn't have to do this. I think that's...
No case law yet has tested that, Sam.
Yeah, if you're going to be disruptive by making them make a pledge that they might not understand or that you're going to make, or that you're going to ostracize, or potentially ostracize for not making the pledge, I think active communication about why you think it's bad should be allowed during the pledge. Do we have a First Amendment or not?
For students, unfortunately, we have a very restricted First Amendment as defined by lots of case law. But yeah. I tend to be with you, Sam.
During Seattle's March for Science, members of the Satanic Temple caught positive attention by stopping traffic so an emergency vehicle could cross the march route. A marcher posted in the Public March for Science Seattle Facebook group, shout out to the Satanist group that helped stop traffic so an ambulance could get through, with a photo of members clad in their traditional black and red garb. All comments on the post were positive, with messages like, wow, talk about civil unrest bringing people together, and glad to know that the Satanists are better citizens than 45 and company.
We do love it. You know, they were at the Women's March. They were at the March for Science. Not sure if they're doing anything for People's Climate March, which right now is happening in D.C., but it's a really great way, and I like how even people who don't identify or affiliate with Satanic Temple are saying, yeah, they're cool. They're great. We get what they're doing. Or even if they don't get what they're doing, they're like, yeah, we're cool to have someone be awesome. And I just love the contrast of the black and red garb and the language and the imagery mixed with, hey, hold up. We got to let this emergency vehicle go by because we care for our fellow people. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's amazing that Satanists are sometimes showing themselves to be more humanistic than Christians who claim to have a monopoly on...
I'd even go so far as to say sometimes they do one better than us. I think in a couple places they've done a better job than we have. At some places they have a chance to be more effective than we have, than we are.
Because they can use the rule set in their favor.
They can use the rule set in their favor. But I think, I'm going to say especially the Seattle crowd might be doing a better job at a couple things than the atheist community. In as much as they are separate from the atheist community.
They've got the character down.
They do, and I'm trying to get a little bit beyond that. But you're right. You are absolutely correct. They are fantastic at the LARPing. I love it. But okay, not LARPing because they do believe it. But
taking on the mantle of a specific name and image and legacy aligned with your group's beliefs.
Yeah, and I hope they can keep it going in a way that we couldn't. And so once again, good job, guys.
Hooray, Satanists.
Yeah, good job in Seattle. I heard Seattle was phenomenal. So we posted some pictures of
the Olympia March.
Us at the Olympia March on our Facebook wall. And
we got some feedback.
So for example, you're going to have to explain this one to me, Becky. Orlando from Washington State via Facebook. It used to start in it used to start in San Francisco. Now it's Seattle. When you don't believe in God, you believe in anything.
So I'm not sure. I think that she's referencing my poster that says this atheist believes that science is awesome, which maybe she says, oh, you could believe in anything if you don't believe in God. And I don't know why she's having this slam at San Francisco. I guess perhaps because it also is a liberal, you know, viewed as a liberal city.
Oh, is she calling us a snowflake?
I guess so, maybe. And I couldn't help but respond, you know, yeah, we could believe in anything, like leprechauns or fairies or ghosts. Because, you know, you just stop believing in God and you just replace God with something else. Not.
Jade, also from Facebook, writes, there are only two genders because science. I'd like to point out there was only one like on the comment.
You liked your own comment. Yeah, there are only two genders because science. I think that Dan Lombardo has, in a previous episode, gone on at length about how science actually can help us understand that there are many different chromosomal variants and variations away from what's typical. And we can see different phenotypic biological sexes. And the other thing is that gender most of the time has to do with social constructs and social enacting of roles. If you really liked science, then you wouldn't be in favor of transgender
because psychology
people.
Isn't a science.
Yeah, what we might be seeing here is actually an emboldening of the base that is in favor of 1522, which we would all advocate you decline to sign, and that's in Washington State, the bill to try and get the bathroom bill on the ballot in the fall. So when you see people say like, oh, if you really like science, then you would actually actually be in favor of separate bathrooms for people. We say, no, 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 you really don't have a strong argument there.
Oh. Yeah, if you believe there are only two genders because of science, perhaps check with science before you say that again. Moving on. Glennon Bennett from Facebook. Glenn shared what he called an interesting chart on Earth temperature changes over time, and Bennett replied that there has been tons of research done on this information showing that we have had very little impact on our climate, and that before humans, massive fluctuations in temperature and CO2 have happened. There was a chart.
But it's an awesome one, and we will link to it in the show notes. Because this is the thing, this chart is put forth by two individuals, one of whom purports to be a geologist, one of them whom purports to be a climatologist who really just has a degree in geology, and one of whom who purports to be a meteorologist who says that he has over 300 university credits from various universities. Doesn't say which universities, doesn't say credits in what disciplines, and does not say that he graduated in any particular thing. Also, at around age 70, he claims to have been being a meteorologist and doing weather since for 60 years, so since he was 10. And the reason that he gives is because his grandfather had a weather station on his farm, and he started running the weather station when he was 9. This is a bonkers guy. His name is Cliff Harris, and he has indeed been a weather reporter, which many people would, upon looking closer, realize is not really a meteorologist, per se. Many people who report the weather can be meteorologists. This guy is not one of them. And he is a fan of the belief that humans are being poisoned through the air with chemtrails. Everyone's favorite conspiracy theory, which is supported also by one Alex Jones. So... this guy actually has been in Washington State over the past like 50 years that he's been writing and doing columns. Right now, he's in sort of the Spokane, Coeur d'Alene area, as far as I can tell. And and Josh in what? His Spokane
okay,
pride.
You got to back. Oh, Spokane. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah.
Is very happy to claim
hometown
him,
pride there.
Actually, listening to AM radio is always a fun time back there. It is.
So I don't know what someone is saying when they're like, yeah, this guy really makes sense. And the guy is a bonkers conspiracy theorist.
Well, so he was a weather guy for what, TV, radio?
TV and radio, yep.
Mind control beams.
Yep. So he believes not only in chemtrails, but he also believes in funny religious things. He looks to the Bible to confirm his weather predictions.
Yeah, no, it's amazing that, I mean, with 300 credit hours, and yet no degrees to show for it. Mm-hmm. I got my bachelor's, I got 120 credit hours in, and I could tell you, I'll list the institutions that I have credits with. I could tell you what classes I've done, and anybody that would do would actually present 300 credit hours just out like that, they're essentially trying to say that they have all the authority without actually showing the work for it.
I suspect he might have a degree from Wikipedia University.
Or a Bible college, perhaps.
No, then he would say. Because he's clearly proud to be a Christian.
He does say that he's not a religious fanatic.
Right.
He says instead that he believes that we were put here by God, and if it weren't for Jesus, he wouldn't be getting out of this world alive, and that he knows he's a sinner. And he says, what better person than the son of the judge to stand in my place? How can I go wrong? Yes, this is the person that scientists are going to be convinced by on climate data.
I had that problem with weather men and women. On
reporters?
The news, weather reporters. Because I grew up in Chicago, and Channel 9, WGN, a station that you might all be familiar with, you get cable in North America, is Tom Skilling, who showed up at a weather spotter class I took. And that guy's a straight up meteorologist who I think absorbs other meteorologists to gain their power. Because, it's like, I thought I was going to get pleasant talk about weather. Yeah, low pressure. Here's the stuff about tornadoes, forcing this and pressure zones and mesocyclones. Whoa, what? I just assumed people on TV were all Tom Skilling.
And
okay, it was great.
Come to find out that not everyone who reports the weather is an active meteorologist that's educated in those particular things.
Right. That weather reporting is a facet of journalism. Meteorology is a facet of something else entirely.
Science and science communication.
Yeah, I just don't want to crap on journalism. I like journalism. I had that problem for a long time. Just maybe the way I got got to it was a little different, but man, you talk about, you know, you talk to this guy, he's on TV every day.
You're still up there in terms of your knowledge, as opposed to this guy, Cliff Harris, who has his climate data.
Yeah.
The other thing is that it's in a really small time period.
Yeah.
And when you look at, like, climate change, my understanding is that you're supposed to look at it in terms of a really long scale, right? So those minor fluctuations, I think, Josh, you even said, like, does he realize that weather and climate are two different things?
Yeah, no, I don't think he does. But, I mean, he's been quoted in major scientific publications such as The Return, published in 1989.
Which is a religious
science
text.
Book.
Is that like the movie with David Duchovny where he gets shot and then his wife takes their daughter out into the desert? Is that what that is?
No. He lists it under his science publications, right?
Yeah. He lists himself as being published in several science books, including The Return, which is written in 1989, which is a rapture prediction.
Oh!
Talks heavily, heavily about the Soviet threat.
Oh, so he, yeah, yeah. So in my CV, under, you know, research published, you know, oh, I was cited in 88 reasons the rapture will be in 1988.
Similar, yeah.
Similar like
basically.
That.
Okay.
He also stands by his statement that he made in an 86 publication that that the following decade will see more violence than since the times of Noah. Okay. 90s, really not prosperous, super, super violent, right?
Well, a lot of people thought that.
Yes.
They
but,
always think that, though. I mean, yeah. every decade is the worst decade as long as it can be pushed. As long as, I mean, it's always going to get worse according to a certain mindset.
Right.
The end times are coming, and that's what they expect. So that just translates to it must be worse next year. Or next decade.
The other thing is that this guy's company that he purports to have as meteorological predictions is actually a commodities advising company. It's to help advise people, agriculturalists, about when to plant your crops and what kind of seeds to buy because he thinks he can predict the weather really well, or where to buy your real estate because that's where global warming will have you be most efficacious in or advantageous, even though he doesn't believe in global warming as caused by man. It's all very strange.
So apparently posting photos about science on Facebook, kind of a winner.
I guess so. Yeah. Since it brings in the doubters, shall we say, in our most gentle ways.
Yeah, I think it might be time to go. Thank you very much, Becky.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you very much, Josh.
Thank you.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. You can email us at questions at askanatheist.tv, Twitter us at askanatheistwa. Apparently we're on Facebook. Still don't know how to Twitter. Did I miss anything?
Don't think so.
All right, great. See you guys next week.